This reading is Khanda Vimutti and Sammagidama by Ajahn Mun. Khanda Vimutti is liberation, release, deliverance from the khandas. Sammagidama, endowed with or possessing Dhamma. Translated by Ajahn Panyavado. And sannyā in this is translated as memory, where we usually have it, or hear it translated as perception. And it comes up a lot, so I just wanted to read a note from the Patipada by Ajahn Mahabua, translated by Ajahn Panya, a note on this translation. Memory, sannyā. It has become popular in many places to translate the word sannyā by perception, and this is a wrong translation. It seems probable that this stems from the translations. Oh, here's a note from me. I'm not trying to pick a fight here. It's for myself, I prefer the Ajahn Sudito method of just like the shotgun approach to translation, taking all of them and like a prism and seeing, you know, what works. I'm not saying right or wrong. It has become popular in many places to translate the word sannyā by perception, and this is a wrong translation. It seems probable that this stems from the translations of parts of the Tipitaka in the last century and early in this century by scholars who tried to put Buddhist ideas into Western philosophical concepts. The dictionary, Concise Oxford, gives the meaning of perceive as to apprehend with the mind, observe, understand, etc., or to apprehend through one of the senses. Then for perception, it gives act, faculty of perceiving, intuitive recognition, philos, action, by which the mind refers to its sensations to external objects as cause. All of the above definitions involve all of the mental khandhas and are complex processes. But in addition, if sannyā is not translated as memory, then where is memory in the khandhas? Not enough thought has been given to the overwhelming importance of memory. Surely this should be clear to anyone who understands the devastating effect of Alzheimer's disease, in which the memory steadily diminishes until the unfortunate victim has no reference left from past experience and he becomes virtually an imbecile. Throughout Thailand, sannyā is always translated by kwam jam, which just means memory, and this is universally accepted by both scholars and those who practice the ways of meditation. Introduction. While Venerable Acharya Mun was staying in Wat Saphatum Wan in Bangkok in the year 1930, approximately, he composed the booklet Khanda Vimutti and Sammagidama. This booklet is written in Thai in a semi-poetical form, and it displays the teachings of the Buddha in an unusual but refreshing way. Both at the beginning and at the end, the author points out that this is a teaching by way of wisdom. There is little about samadhi or jhana in this booklet, and it may rightly be called a wisdom teaching. I have translated an English version with many corrections and rethinks, and I believe that this translation follows the intended meaning of the author. I have made no attempt to follow the poetical manner of the original text, for I don't claim to have any special ability as a poet. So I have tried to present the meaning that the author intended in a prose form. But I'm afraid that I may in due course see more hidden and deeper meanings in this text. I have heard that there are some people who dispute that this was written by Acharya Mun, the well-known and great teacher. They say that there was another Acharya Mun in the same Wat at the same time. It is possible that this may be true, but the text which was written at the time by hand was clearly signed with the name Pra Buridhato Mun, Wat Saphatum Wan, the author. It seems hardly likely that two bhikkhus should have this unusual name at the same place and time. Bhikkhu Panyavado, Wat Pabantad, May 2004. Khanda Vimutti and Sammagidama. Namatu Sugatasa Panja Dhamma Khandani. I humbly bow down and raise my hands in praise of the Venerable Sugata, the Supreme Teacher, the Sakyamuni, the Supremely Self-Enlightened Lord Buddha, and of the Venerable Nine Navalokuttara Dhammas and the Arya Sangha Savaka. Here I will speak of the Dhammakandas in brief way by way of Satipanya. There was once a man who loved himself and whose thoughts were fearful of suffering. Wanting happiness and freedom from fear and danger, he wandered about. He said that wherever sukha is, there I want to go. but he wandered about for a long time. His character was such that he loved himself and was very afraid of death, and he truly wanted to get free from old age and death. One day he came to know the truth and abandoned Samudaya, the cause of suffering, and all the many sankharas. He then came to a cave of joy where sukha did not disappear, and the cave was like unto his physical body. He gazed all around this cave with joy. Dukkha collapsed, and he was completely at ease. He knew in himself that his former fear had diminished, and he looked back and forth, as though there was a hill in front of him. Should he go and tell his former friends all about it? He feared that they would reckon he was mad. To put up with living alone and finding out about the way of calm, which means stopping the process of thinking and not associating with others, this is better than wandering about in an unseemly, boastful manner, for one would soon receive flattery and blame, which would just create a disturbance and trouble. There was another good man, afraid of death and full of apprehension, who came searching, and he spoke frankly and made one feel sympathy for him. He asked, saying, "You have done a lot of striving and put forward much effort. In all this time, have you seen the true Dhamma, which the heart longs for, or not?" "Eh, how does he know my mind?" That good man wanted to stay with him as his follower, so he said, "Good, good." This would seem to refer to the first man above. Note: "I give you my blessing, and I will show you the way to a mountain cave of happiness where there is no dukkha." In other words, kaya gatasati bhavana. Enjoy it and admire it to cool your heart, and it will cure all your troubles and turbulence. It is the path of the Aryavamsa. But whether you go along it or not, I am not going to force you nor speak deceptively in fun, for what I say will be the truth. Then he gave some riddles to answer, and the first riddle was, "What is rawang?" Note: not a Thai word. In Cambodian it means to whirl around. He gave the answer, "Runs fast," which means that the nature of vijnana, consciousness, is to be quick, going in a line following a train of thought. Sanya, memory, acts immediately without doubt or hesitation, and the heart which dwells inside runs back and forth. Sanya, note, memory in all its functions. Sanya, which is strongly attached to external things, deceives the citta, making it restless and distracted, wandering afar, searching. It deceives one that those things are true when in fact they are like magical conjuring tricks. Question 2. Who gets totally free from all five khandhas? Answer: the heart, of course. It gets free and dwells alone, not being caught up, attached, or involved in anything, and having done away with the poison of possessive attachment, it is finished with delusion and dwells one and alone. Then the deceits of sanya can no longer cause delusion. Question 3. In that which is called death, who are they that die and where? Answer: the sankharas are the ones that die, destroying the results of kama. Question 4. What is it that makes one go on revolving in the round of samsara? Answer: the tricks of sanya lead one to go on whirling about, trusting sanya, and wrongly thinking gladly of going from this realm of existence to another realm, and so going round and round, the citta being completely forgotten and memory of it being shut out entirely, so that even by striving to find Dhamma one doesn't see it. Question 5. Who defines and who determines what are Dhammas? Answer: the heart defines and the heart determines them by going to the Lord, their chief, sanya, and no other. For it thinks that this is good, grasps evil, and forces one to be attached to love and hate. Question 6. Eat once, and then no more searching to eat? Answer: this is the end of wanting to look and know, and there is no further concern to see what the future holds, for what was disorderly has been cured. The heart then sits unmoving on its throne, and all longing has been dispersed. Question 7. The four-sided pond brimful of water? Answer: Dhamma is the end of desires coming from doubt, clean and free from blemish, and there is no fear or danger. In this, sanya is extracted and sankhara khanda causes no trouble, so the heart is full and overflowing without any lack. All is quiet and still in the citta, and there are no doleful thoughts. This is something one should admire and be glad about at all times. For even if one has been in contact with the 10,000 heavens, it is not the equal of knowing the truth, discarding the khandhas and the ending of desire, which are really valuable and important. Then memory remains just memory without getting in the way, and the heart is not obsessed with anything, its struggles having come to an end. It is as if one were looking at the image of one's face in a mirror, but without any thought associated with sanya, because sanya is the same kind of thing as that image. Don't be seduced by the attractions of the world, sankhara things, for the heart moves and takes hold of the heart that is not free. It moves enough for one to know for sure that this has happened because of the change that takes place. This heart is the impermanence of the heart, and it must know the five khandhas and their different types when the chitta changes. Before I understood this, I was deluded, believing that sanya was the heart and that there was an inside and an outside. Now, my heart is the chief, and it doesn't expect any support from one or any sanya, for it is not possessive. In all things, whether they arise or cease, I have no need to be possessive nor to guard against the group called sanya. It is like going up to the top of a very high mountain and looking at the world below and seeing all living things. A note of explanation. Being extremely high and seeing one's own story from the beginning right up to the present is the whole path, magga, like a stairway. Note, this last section was overwritten in the original text. Whether by way of changing it or deleting it, it is uncertain. It is also rather difficult to decipher what has been written. Question 8. Does the water rise and fall in accordance with that state of truth, Satchanja? Answer. One cannot rectify the changes that take place in the sankharas. In the normal way, kama, which has been made, has no intentional malice against anyone. But trying to push it away or hold on to it is stupid and a form of evil in the chitta. One must not think of going against the normal nature of things, sabhava, which are in themselves true. If good and evil, which arise in various circumstances, have been discarded from oneself and are not entangled with one's sankharas, one is cool and peaceful. But when one knows the truth, one is bound to throw out the sankharas, which are always changing about. For having seen them and become wearied of them, one can let go of them easily, and there is no need to force this. Then the natural state is a peaceful heart with which no longer accepts their reality. Question 9. The five duties. Are they complete? Answer. The khandhas are divided up into five sense bases of the sankharas, and each group has its duty, which is its business, and it cannot take on any other work, being fully loaded already. They cannot accept even the highest blessings and praise which make for happiness, nor blame of the worst kind in which one loses everything. Altogether, they accord with their true natural state, and in all eight kinds, note, eight kinds refers to the eight lokadhammas, gain, loss, honor, dishonor, happiness, misery, praise, blame. Altogether, they accord with their true original state, natural state, and in all eight kinds, the heart does not turn and become involved with them because rupa khandhas cannot avoid old age and illness. But the nama khandhas get no rest, like an engine, because they receive the results of the kama that has been done. Good things make them glad and gain heart. Bad things disturb and agitate the heart and create incessant doubt, incessant thought, like a fire burning in the chitta which is tarnished and dull. Thoughts arise of themselves of love and anger, but who's to blame? Wanting never to grow old or die? But who can do this? But can anyone do this? Such things are just not possible, and all one has are vain wishes, like not wanting to let the chitta wander about getting to know things, but wanting it to remain as one in the hope of making a refuge of impassivity. But the chitta is by nature changeable and never fixed and unmoving, although sanya can sometimes remain for a while. If one can know into, note, rutau, to penetrate and know, to be up to or on to, as in, I knew what he was up to. If one can know into the normal state of all five khandhas, the heart will be bright and clean and free from all blemish. This is the end of the story. So if one can know in this way, it is very good, because one sees truly and draws away, free, which is the end of the way. Then one doesn't oppose what is natural, and one accords with the truth, and whether one is rich or poor, all things and possessions, both external or internal, and good or evil, must cease, fade away, and be forgotten. One cannot grasp anything in the way the heart intends, for the heart is the instability of the heart, and it moves restlessly. But one can watch it, and catch on to it, and know it, and this brings great contentment. The small obscures the large, and knowing does not penetrate, and in this way the khandhas totally obscure Dhamma. Looking at the khandhas in dullness, one doesn't see Dhamma for the dust. Note, dust, as the Lord Buddha said, there are a few who have little dust in their eyes to see Dhamma. As for Dhamma being greater than the khandhas, that can't be seen. Question 10. Have not, not have, have. What is that? Answer. From here on, the questioner and the question change places. The pupil now asks the questions and the teacher answers. Answer. Here I am stuck and cannot think of any way to answer. Please point out the meaning of it to me clearly and the answer of this riddle. The answer. Wherever there is birth or coming into being, there is that which has existence in various ways in accordance with laws of cause and effect. Then it ceases and has not. Thus it is obvious that animals and people accord with the first part of the question, have, not have. The latter part of the question, not have, have, is Dhamma, which is deep and profound, and whoever gets there has reached the goal. This has not sankharas and has Dhamma, which is firm and stable. There, that's it. The single Dhamma, true solitude. Dhamma which is the one, unchanging, beyond birth in all realms, the supreme calm. Then, if there is any emotional disturbance of the heart, it's not accepted and is thrown out, quenched, quiet, still and clear to the heart. The heart then withdraws from all addiction and is cured of all passion and all wanting is completely uprooted, dispersing all doubt. As for being entangled with the five khandhas, this dies away and draws to a close. And that which has made one whirl about in the three realms of the universe is broken and destroyed. Then even the greatest desires are thrown out and fall away. Love ceases and is completely cured, ending the poison of possessiveness. And all troubles are cured and cease as the heart would wish. Questioner, please point out other different ways of the heart which are samudaya, the cause of suffering, of the citta, which are against Dhamma. Answer, samudaya, the cause of suffering, is very extensive. But bringing it down to its essentials, it is love that forces the heart to long for the khandhas. If Dhamma had stayed eternally with the citta, separate and apart, samudaya, the cause of suffering, could never have been. You must keep this in mind concerning the way of the citta, and there is no need to go whirling around incessantly thinking until you go mad. For in whoever the Dhamma does not dwell unshakably and gladly attached, his heart falls into samudaya, the cause of suffering, longing for a body. To put it briefly, dukkha and Dhamma are constantly in the citta. Take the sin and work on it until you have sought out and experienced the truth of it for yourself. Then you will be entirely cool and peaceful, and however much sukha or dukkha you have, you will not be afraid. Doleful things, which means samudaya, the cause of suffering, will steadily diminish and will go towards what is good. If you get the meaning, note, rutau, of this, you will be close to curing your troubles, enough for you to get some rest and respite to search out and find the path of escape. The citta, which knows Dhamma, forgets the citta which is attached to dust, and the heart always knows the Dhamma which is sukha, and the khandhas which are truly dukkha. Dhamma is bound to be Dhamma, and the khandhas are bound to be the khandhas. That's all. And what is called cool peace, the dispersal of troubles, means the withdrawal of the citta from the wrong way to which it is firmly attached. But as for the sankhara khandhas, they are void of sukha and are truly dukkha, because they are bound to grow old, be sick, and die one day, inevitably. If the citta knows the supreme Dhamma, the citta withdraws from wrong things which cause depression and harm, bad things which are severe and serious faults of the heart. Seeing Dhamma displayed clearly extracts all of those things which are bad and which poison the heart. Then the citta sees Dhamma in abundance, which is free from fault. When one meets the Dhamma, which strips off all agents of lust, one has sati, one is not involved, one's love for the khandhas is destroyed, and all pleasure in them ends. This is the end of all dust and the end of anxiety and concern. So then, if one wants to think, there's no reason why one shouldn't do so according to one's natural inclinations. Questioner, when one doesn't prevent returning, one doesn't listen, and turbulence and trouble are free to go on, should one be able to know that evil has arisen? Because in truth it has. Answer, evil can arise because of ignorance. If one can close the door against stupidity, it will be very peaceful, and evil of all kinds will disappear. One can't put up with it, so throw it out. The khandhas and all things incline to dukkha and never to sukha. Formerly, I was dull and stupid, as though I had gone into a dark cave. Wanting to see Dhamma took hold of my heart, but without any real purpose. I took hold of memory, assuming that it was the heart, until I became addicted and obsessed in admiring memory and fondling it. I did it for a long time, and this false use of memory blinded me and wouldn't let me see. So I went astray, playing with the five khandhas. It was pitiable, raising myself up to boast that I was free. I went about bullying and criticizing others who were my friends, which was quite useless. Going around looking at the faults of others is what arose in my heart, like making a fire to burn myself, which was bound to make me dull and dirty. For whoever is right or wrong, and good or evil, is for themselves alone. But as for one's own heart, one must try to be guarded and set up carefulness. Don't let evil things come and whirl around in you. You should be endowed with merit and right action, which brings contentment. Then, if one sees others do evil things, oneself remains good. It is the defilement, ragi, which sees the khandhas with firm intention, and having grasped them, one is bound to be really troubled because of old age and death. Repeatedly, the evil kalesas, hot and steamy, gather and enter, stirring up trouble, full of love and anger, obviously blameworthy things, together with strong fear, a heavy heart, and tormenting thoughts. Time after time, the five objects, note, the five objects probably refers to the five sense objects. Time after time, the five objects of desire come enticingly, making displays of all kinds of things to show their power, because one has grasped the five khandhas as one's own. Then it is hardly possible for one to get free from dukkha and danger. If you already know your own faults, then don't waste time. Look at the characteristics of the sankharas, which are always impermanent, and get used to this. You will then probably come to admire the Dhamma that is the single and solitary citta. That impermanence refers to the heart which is disturbed by memory. When seen, keep on looking at it and stay with it as it changes. Then as soon as all external objects, aramana, die away completely, Dhamma appears, and as soon as Dhamma is seen, the disturbance of the citta disappears. That citta is not attached to anything else, and this truth is the end of the door. Note, door probably refers to shutting the door at the start of this question. Whether one knows the method of the heart in this way or not, if one penetrates and knows, rutau, impermanence, the first free citta arises. This is probably the original citta, which is truly unchanging, and knowing the original citta frees one from all falsehood without doubt. But if one goes outward at the end of that citta, it is immediately wrong. What is called darkness is because of the citta thinking possessively of good, and this possessive citta is at the end of the citta which thinks outwardly. The first citta is good when Dhamma appears and doubt disappears. Then there is the seeing of Dhamma which is excellent and above all worlds. As for one's previous thinking, searching and whirling around seeking, it all stops, stripped bare, and one has reached the end. But one still has dukkha in that one must lie down and sleep and eat food and do whatever is necessary. But the heart is tamed and close to the original citta, and in thinking it does not go out searching. It is natural for the citta that it must think, but as soon as it feels the first free citta in distress, it withdraws into silence and stillness, away from that disturbance which is causing trouble. It is also normal for the sankharas to arise, but they also disappear in a similar way. In fact, all such things steadily diminish until none of them are left. Beware of the heart when memory becomes subtle, for it's likely to force the citta to be attached to passivity. The heart is the impermanence of the heart. Look at this and see it all the time until you get used to it. When you reach the culmination of it, if you know in yourself the music of the heart, which is just like magical tricks that the Lord called vipassanu pakilesa, distracting phenomena which interfere with insight, vipassana. Transformations of state which are false even though they appear to be true. Knowing arises by itself and it is given the name of seeing. But it's not like hearing and understanding at the level of asking questions and thinking over, pondering and analyzing rupanama, are also not seeing for oneself. Knowing spontaneously arises in oneself, but it's not the music of thinking which knows the original citta, the first citta free of torment. The original citta knows in itself for certain that the nature of the sankharas is that of incessant change. In this there is no process or manner which goes to look at or know anything, nor is it knowing for the purpose of making a claim. The citta probably knows the citta itself because of the restless fire. Note, probably refers to the defilements, kilesa. And the citta knows the restless change, and the citta is attached to it and cannot get free of it, for in truth they are one and the same thing. This citta has dual characteristics which are known as sanya leading it into attachment. That impermanence is one self fixing on another, then the heart knows its own deterioration and freedom is obscured. The heart then becomes insipid and dry, and it loses the taste of being free from doubt. It searches into those things which are about one, both externally and internally is broken, and all one's aspirations wither and die away. Then anger and love and things which make the heart heavy go forth. But the desires of the heart can stop, thereby curing the trouble of torment and freeing all heaviness of heart and complaints. Like rain sprinkling over it, the heart is refreshed from the exhaustion of the irritable heart. The heart is cool because it doesn't have to go about with concern for others. Knowing the first citta in the present frees one from torment. All good and evil are then of no great concern, and they must die away as well as all defilements. Live quietly. The first citta is not concerned about the affairs of the citta, having ended all thought and concern. There's no need to fuss and be busy, nor to be careful. Just lie down or sit quiet and free and dwell in the original citta. Questioner, you have pointed out the path, magga, for me to hear, showing the principles sharp and clearly. You are skilled in displaying points with a very broad scope and very brightly. But there is still another aspect of the heart which is not freed from samudaya, the cause of suffering. It would be good if you please point it out in a special way. Answer. Samudaya, the cause of suffering, is the longing of love. And if this obsession is very strong, it creates birth anew, which one has no desire to stop and escape from. In the lower levels, this means that the five sensual desires are defiled. In the higher levels, the Lord pointed to the longing for jhana as being samudaya. If then one takes up and acts on the tendencies that are in one's citta, it will be the story of obsessive thinking in sankhara, kanda, being obsessed in everything in the same way as it has been for ages. Then one turns to virtue to develop the citta, but in the wrong way, so that it often breaks up into wild and distracted thought. Then before long one becomes obsessed in bad ways without realizing that they are shameful. Those things that one emotionally likes, one admires and becomes obsessed with them. Obsessed until one forgets oneself with no fear of danger. obsessed in looking at the faults of others, full of evil, but one's own faults one doesn't see. Why so? However many faults other people have, they don't make oneself fall into hell at all. But one's own faults, which are sorry and doleful, don't need to be many to bring back vipaka, the results of kama, for one to fall into the greatest hell. Try to see your own faults all the time so as to make your heart used to giving up those faults. This will probably make you admire sukha, which is free from dukkha and danger. When you see your own faults clearly, you must hurry to cut them off and get rid of them, for it's no use dawdling and thinking about getting rid of them without acting. In regard to always wanting good without ceasing, this is the basis of samudaya, the cause of suffering. It is a great fault, and the fear of not being good is very strong. Good and not good are strong poisons in the citta. It's like taking the wrong remedy when one has a fever. The disease is made much worse by such things which are harmful. Dhamma doesn't become clear because of wanting good. This is fundamental. If the desire for good is strong, it is bound to drag the citta about, making it think and wander about in turbulent ways until the heart deteriorates and everything becomes increasingly doleful. This great fault makes one go further and further away from the Dhamma, which is true. Questioner, when you point out samudaya, the cause of suffering, here my heart is afraid, and when I hear the underlying essence, it tends to be confusing and very involved. But when you point out magga, the path, it goes to my heart. I can't hold any more and throw the rest out and withdraw into stillness in the calm heart. That's the end of it. This is called Khanda Vimutti Sammagi Dhamma, which is always present. It neither goes or comes and is the natural state, Sabhava Dhamma, which is true and singular and neither moves about restlessly to keep going, nor loses its substance and meaning. This is the end of the matter. That's all. Whether this is right or wrong, you must use wisdom to think and look and know. Praburidataman Watsapratumwan, the author.
Question. The translation of Sanya, I was seen in the Thai forest reading the recollection.
What's that?
It's also translated in, when I've been reading, as recollection. So in both of those, within that definition, there's reference to past and conditioning, and I'm just wondering how come it's so often translated as samya, as perception.
As what?
Perception.
Perception, because actually in the Thai, it's also kwamjam samkhan manmai, which is means giving importance and meaning. So that perception is part of that. You know, giving a meaning, a recognition, because it's a function. I mean, the function of memory is to just say memory is. I mean, memory is has many facets. So that in order to remember something, you also have an association with it. You have an association of what its label. You see something green and standing up, you say, oh, that's a tree. But that's a function of memory and perception and giving memory has a lot of, once you start unpacking it, that it has a lot of different functions a lot of different functions. Similarly with sanya is used in terms of recollection. I mean, so you're actively using the use of memory to the anicca sanya, it's like remembering, recollecting impermanence. samana sanya, the recollection of being a religious seeker. So those are functions of memory, but they're also bringing up different aspects. It's not as if it's just black and white. And you remember something, and then it's all, and that's all there is. There's a whole package that comes with that. So it's important to be considering that, because we have you bring up a memory of the past. But that memory of the past has all the emotional baggage and nuances and associations that come with it. So then, it's not. That's where the five khandhas are not individual, discrete entities that don't connect with each other. They are. You say there's I think it's in the discourse on Majjhima 43, the questions and answers of Dhammadina and Visakha, the khandhas are conjoined. They are not disjoint. They bleed into each other. They condition each other. You can't actually separate them out and say this is sanya that stands alone, or this is consciousness that stands alone. It doesn't work that way. They interact. They depend on each other. They are conjoint. They're not disjoint.
And I had heard, I think I was reading it before Ajahn Mahabhua's translation of Sanya and Sankara, short-term memory and long-term memory. And I was just wondering if you had heard of that in particular to him, or if you'd ever heard of that before. Mm-hmm. It struck me as very different.
In this remarkable poem.
Yeah.
Do you know whether we have a copy of it in the Thai here?
Yeah.
We do?
Yeah, we do.
I'm just wondering about the translation where he says something in effect, the longing for the good is the cause of the trouble.
Oh, right.
Because obviously that would be in contrast with something like this. It teaches that. Mm-hmm. The Buddha's saying things that like one should separate mental states into the wholesome and unwholesome,
right,
and then work to uphold and improve and sustain the wholesome.
Right.
But the wholesome and the good sound really close to each other.
Yes, yes. Well, I one of the things, both of those are true. In the sense that it depends on how, where, how you're approaching it, there is the necessity to cultivate those aspects of the wholesome. The whole path is built on metta. How do you think of the Noble Eightfold Path is all wholesome dhammas that one is cultivating. But then this is it's khandha vimutti, so that that's just more around the liberation of the khandhas. So then that longing for good and the kind of creating an identity of me being a good person who is not tempted or is not stained. But those are that's an obstacle, and so that It depends on which way one looks at it. It's sort of like the the story in, from the sixth patriarch of the sort of, I can't remember it all that clear, but there's where the candidate for the sixth patriarch writes a poem and it's okay on its own because it's more talking about the path than developing the path, and then the sixth patriarch who the person who becomes a sixth patriarch sort of sees that and says, no, it's like, you know, there is no mirror, there is no dust. It's, you know, it's speaking from a different perspective, and that's similar. There's like this is speaking from a different perspective, and both of them are true, and it's a lot of it is they because you can grasp at the. It's like with Ajahn Chah, oftentimes he talk about the way he would say, like the convention, the convention. Well, I'm not sure how. I mean, no, the sumut and vimut, sort of like the conventional and the transcendent, and you can grasp it. Either of them, but then also there's a necessity. Each has their function, so that part of the development of wisdom is understanding how each one is applied and how it is relevant, so that we for the most part, we have to pay a lot of attention to the conventional aspects of development, but we do need to reflect from a transcendent place as well in terms of relinquishment and letting go. So both of those are the longing for good. It's like, and I think he was quite specific in that, just even like that, say the longing for jhana. Of course, you know, the Buddha praises the development of these clear states of consciousness, but then the cause of suffering can be its longing and its identification of when I get my samadhi together, then I'm going to be okay. So that each has the seeds of suffering if it's misunderstood. And of course that's where the fundamental roots from dependent origination, the avijja, that lack of true knowledge, is the source of suffering. So that being able to cut through the roots of that fundamental avijja.
Well, reminded me of another phrase. It's very similar in the other one I translated as possessing goodness. Longing for goodness, and then in the other phrase that you're possessed, trying to possess.
Yeah, that possessing goodness, like. I'm such a good practitioner.
Well,
I'm such a good person. Of course, if somebody criticizes you, then you fall down. So that possessing goodness, which is a good thing. The Buddha, of course, elucidates in so many ways the necessity of cultivating that goodness. But it's sort of seeing its function is one of the aspects. aspects that allows us to penetrate and to relinquish. Because the relinquishment doesn't negate the need for cultivation of goodness.
Yeah. Or is it similar to the Buddha talked about letting go of the path, like towards the end of the path? You're sort of putting it down,
So, like the first sutta of the Sanyutta Nikaya, you know, how without thinking, I can't remember it now, but that's, you know, it seems sort of paradoxical, but it has a different content, it has a different application, or different. Seeing how, what's the appropriate time to move forward? That's like Ajahn Chah said. He's learning how to do dhammas when you're not going forward, not going back, and not standing still. Well, what the heck is that? You sort of realize, oh yeah, there is that need to not identify with any of it. There's the need to. Yeah, you have to know when to apply effort to make progress. One has to know to make tactical retreats. One has to know when to hold one's place really still. But then it's not in any of those. But yeah, the Kundalini. I've looked at the time. It's not easy time. Mm-hmm. It was written in 1930, and Ajahn Mun was he had an incredible facility with language, and he loved to play with language. That was like people who lived with Ajahn Mun. So, like when you read the biography of Ajahn Mun, you have this picture of this really fierce, dour, absolutely, you know, uncompromising. But then you have other people's accounts of living with Ajahn Mun, and how often you just love to just listen to him, because he would talk dhamma, and it was so much fun to listen to him speaking dhamma, because he was so engaging, and his use of language and simile and stories. He was a great storyteller. That doesn't come across in some of the pictures. Yeah, that's like I said. This is the most warm and fuzzy picture of Ajahn Mun.